this morning we're going to tie into the children's message that Lizzie gave this morning and talking about chasing a lion. And so we're going to start by reading about some of David's mighty warriors, his mighty men, in 2 Samuel chapter 23. If you want to turn there in your Bibles, 2 Samuel chapter 23. 2 Samuel chapter 23, we're going to begin in verse 8. And I'm going to butcher a whole bunch of names this morning. And so I'm going to say them with confidence. And you're going to be like, that must be how they're pronounced. That's how you get through these names. All right, 2 Samuel chapter 23, beginning in verse 8. These are the names of David's mighty men. Jochebed, a Tachmonite, was chief of the three. He raised his spear against 800 men, whom he killed in one encounter. Next to him was Eleazar, son of Dodai, the Ahite. As one of the three mighty men, he was with David when they taunted the Philistines for battle. Then the men of Israel retreated, but he stood his ground and struck down the Philistines till his hand grew tired and froze to the sword. The Lord brought about a great victory that day. The troops returned to Eleazar, but only to strip the dead. Next to him was Sama, son of Haggai the Harite. When the Philistines banded together at a place where there was a field of lentils, Israel's troops fled from them. But Shema took his stand in the middle of the field. He defended it and struck the Philistines down, and the Lord brought about a great victory. During harvest time, three of the 30 chief men came down to David at the cave while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim. At that time, David was in the stronghold, and the Philistine garrison was at Bethlehem. David longed for water and said, "Oh, that someone would give me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem." So the three mighty men broke through the Philistine lines, drew water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem, and carried it back to David. But he refused to drink it. Instead, he poured it out before the Lord. "Far be it from me, O Lord, to do this," he said. "Is it not the blood of men who went at the risk of their lives?" And David would not drink it. Such were the exploits of the three mighty men. Abishai, the brother of Joab, son of Zeruiah, was chief of the three. He raised his spear against 300 men, whom he killed. And so he became as famous as the three. Was he not held in greater honor than the three? He became their commander, even though he was not included among them. Benaniah, son of Joiada, was a valiant fighter from Kabzeel, who performed great exploits. He struck down two of Moab's best men. He also went down into a pit on a snowy day and killed a lion. And he struck down a huge Egyptian. Although the Egyptian had a spear in his hand, Benaniah went against him with a club. He snatched the spear from the Egyptian's hand and killed him with his own spear. Such were the exploits of Benaniah, son of Jehoiada. He too was as famous as the three mighty men. He was held in greater honor than any of the 30, but he was not included among the three. And David put him in charge of his bodyguard. All right, so this is a variable who's who in David's mighty men. And as you can see, they did some amazing and powerful things. Now, of course, there's 37 names in the list. So there were 37 mighty men. And we have a number of them. Jochebed used a spear to kill 800 warriors in one battle. Eleazar stood with David against the enemy, and when the whole army had fled, he stayed and killed the Philistines until his hand was frozen to the sword. Another version says that his hand was so too tired to lift the sword. The rest of the army didn't return until it was time to collect the plunder. Shammah, the army deserted him in the field of lentils. But he stood his ground, beat back the Philistines, and the Lord brought a great victory to them. Then Abishai used a spear to kill 300 warriors in a single battle. And Benaniah, who was listed as a valiant warrior, killed two champions of Moab, and on a snowy day chased a lion into a pit and killed it. The title of the book that we're going to be looking at is called Chase the Lion. And that's the title of the series we're doing. It'll be two or three parts, and it'll be spread out because we've got some other special things going on in between. But the title comes from the story of Benaniah, who chased the lion into a pit on a snowy day and killed it. Benaniah was one of David's 30 mighty warriors. And his reaction to seeing the lion was not to run in fear, but his reaction was to attack. Now, when you hear a lion's roar, when that registers in your auditory cortex, the brain sends you an immediate message. And that message is to run away as fast and as far as you can to get away from that sound. That's the normal reaction to a lion's roar. But Benaniah had the opposite. He went and he attacked. And so the question is, if we think about lions in many different ways, what will our response be when we face that trial, that tribulation, that dream? Will we face the lion? Will our response be to run from that fear, run from that dream, run from being obedient to God? Or will we face the lion like Benaniah did? Our response needs to be attack, because lion chasers run to the roar. A lion in your life could be many different things. And of course, it's just an analogy. We're not really saying go to the zoo and fight a lion, though that would be cool. At least put it on YouTube if you do that. But a lion could be a problem that you're facing. It could be a dream for the future. It could be a sin that you're struggling with. Anything that you feel backed into a corner about, that's kind of your lion squaring off with you. Napoleon said that there were two types of courage. He said there was regular courage, and then there's 2 o'clock in the morning courage. And he said the rarest attribute among his generals was the 2 o'clock in the morning courage. Fulfilling God's calling for your life, going after that lion, will require 2 o'clock in the morning type courage. You are just one idea, one risk, one decision away from living a different life and living a life that's on purpose following God. Put yourself in Benaniah's sandals for a moment. Your vision is obscured by the falling snow. You see your breath, and you detect movement out of the corner of your eye. It's a lion stalking its prey, and the prey is you. This scenario has been played out multiple times over human history, and the outcome is usually the same. Man sees lion, man runs from lion catches man, and lion eats man. That's the typical fashion that it happens in. But Benaniah takes a different approach. He took the courage to attack the lion, and then not only attacked the lion, he chased it back into its den, where he then killed it. Now, a full-grown lion runs at 36 miles an hour and can leap 30 feet in a single jump. Benaniah does not stand a chance in this fight without the Lord's help. But he follows the paw prints in the snow. He goes, finds the pit, and he attacks. Benaniah faced his fears, and we have to be willing to do the same thing, facing our fears. There are only two fears that a human being is born with. Do you have any idea what they are? What two fears are you born with, you think? Fear of falling? Yes, that's one of them. Good job. What do you think the other one is? Abandonment? Nope. Hunger? Nope. Fear of loud noises. Those are the only two fears that psychologists say that you're born with. Every other fear is a learned fear through your life. And I thought it was very fitting this morning that as I was writing some of this and going through over it again this morning, I looked down and I had my hand on my mouse, and less than a foot away from me was a big spider on my desk. And if you know me at all, spiders are not my friend. Usually I call Lori to come take care of it. I mean, let's just be honest. She calls me for the snakes, I call her for the spiders, and we're good. Okay? And I just thought it was okay. So I faced my fear with that spider this morning. I killed it, but I faced my fear. What can cast out fear? Love, and the love of God. 1 John 4:18 says, perfect love casts out all fear. And oftentimes we don't chase our dreams, we don't face our lions, because we're afraid of failing. But when we know that God loves us no matter what we do, no matter how many times we fall, we know that God is going to be there to pick us up when we fall. And God doesn't guarantee the results of how things are going to come out, but he wants us to do our best and follow him and face our lion no matter what it is. The cure for a fear of failure is not a whole bunch of successes. It's really failing in small doses so that we can become immune to it. And we build up learning how to fail and learning from our failures. God is in the business of helping us overcome our fears, but often it's by coming face to face with our worst fears. But if you run away from your fears, then you're going to be running away for the rest of your life. Because at some point, you have to face your fears. And when you do, you discover that that fear is a coward in face of the courage given to you by God. God is not going to say to you in the end, "Well thought out, my good and faithful servant." He's not going to say, "Well planned, my good and faithful servant." "Well intended, my good and faithful servant." He says what? "Well done, my good and faithful servant." We are called to do something. Not just think something, not just believe something, not just think something's a good idea. We are called to do something. And when you compare the 500-pound lion that you're facing to the Almighty God, the odds are clearly in your favor. No matter what lion it is you're facing, God is bigger. So I ask you today, what are you being called to do? What has God put on your heart as that vision, as that passion, as that dream for you to chase? Because no matter what it is, God is bigger than that. If you're looking for an excuse of why your dream won't come true, you're going to find it. You'll probably find a whole list of reasons why things aren't going to work out. But you can also find opportunities if you look for them. And the size of our dream shows us how big we think our God is. If we have a small dream, then maybe we have a small picture of God. If we have a big dream, maybe we have a bigger picture of God. But we are called to focus on what God's calling us to do and face those lions and then leave the results up to God. We can't force results, but we can be faithful in the way that we attack our lions. We have to trust the person that has given us that dream, has given us that passion, has given us the ability to beat these things. So dare to go after a dream that's bigger than yourself. And when it comes to pass, then there's no doubt that it wasn't you that accomplished this, but it was God who accomplished it through your obedience. Now sometimes our dreams are bigger than what we can accomplish in a lifetime. And in a couple weeks we're going to talk about some long-term dreams. But some dreams don't get fulfilled in our lifetime. David's mighty warriors, for example, helped David become the king of Israel. They fought with him, fighting off attacks, fighting off the coups. And Benaniah helped David fulfill that destiny. David also helped fulfill Benaniah's dream by making him chief bodyguard. And then when the kingdom was passed to Solomon, guess who he tapped to be his commander-in-chief of the army? Benaniah. David's dream set up Solomon as the king of Israel. But Solomon fulfilled David's dream of building a temple in Jerusalem. And Benaniah was that linchpin militarily between the two kingdoms. Our dreams, when they come from God, are bigger than ourselves and bigger than what we can imagine. And those dreams, when we follow them, when we chase those lions, those things create a ripple effect that has an impact across generations. And we may never see the full impact of us following our dreams, following and beating that lion. But God does. In my own life, I see, if I look back, I see the prayers of my grandmother being answered in my calling as a pastor. She didn't know how that was going to turn out when she prayed for me and my brother when we were little. She wanted us to follow God. At the Battle of Jericho, that was a turning point for Israel. It was their first victory in the Promised Land, but the key to that victory was one woman showing kindness. The two spies had gone into Jericho, and they were almost caught. But Rahab, who was a prostitute, showed an act of kindness to the two spies, allowed them to hide in her home. She then led the people that were trying to find them on a different route. And she asked, "Please show kindness to me and my family as I have shown kindness to you." Now Rahab was thinking about herself and her immediate family. But what she didn't know was that three generations later, her family line was going to give birth to King David. That one act of obedience, which was treason in her time, that one chasing her lion and facing that fear and doing the right thing, had an impact that eventually led to Jesus' birth. So where do you start? You start with taking one step toward your dream. And you start by looking at your past and thinking, where in my past has God showed himself to be faithful? What has he done for me in the past? Because you build on that, and that builds your faith. He's faithful. And if you say, "Well, God, I didn't really do anything," you really need to stop and think about it, because God's done something in all of our lives. To have you sitting here breathing, God has done something in your life to get you to this place. So when you start and look at that thing and see, this is how God's been faithful to me in the past, then you use those experiences to confidently take steps in the future, to chase down your lion. And those steps, it just starts with one. And it's the quote I use at the Festival of Faith, and I think it fits today. It's Benjamin Mee in the movie We Bought a Zoo. And he says, "You know, sometimes all you need is 20 seconds of insane courage. Just literally 20 seconds of embarrassing bravery. And I promise you something great will come of it." What would happen in your life if you took that first step? If you took that 20 seconds of insane courage and started doing what God wanted you to do? What would happen in your life? What would happen in the life of our church if we all took that 20 seconds of insane courage together? What would our church look like if, instead of hoping for a better tomorrow, we started taking steps today to make that dream become a reality? We have to be willing to look that lion in the eyes. And I love this picture, and I love that you can almost only see the eyes of this picture because of the screen. Because we have to be willing to look that lion in the eyes and say, "You know what? God is bigger than that lion. My God can defeat that lion with the flip of his hand." Start dreaming. Start thinking about and praying about what dream God has given you. And then take that first step. Use that 20 seconds of insane courage. Take that first step. Start chasing it. And we're going to talk more in a couple weeks about chasing that lion, being like Benaniah, and being like David's mighty warriors.
You've been listening to Pastor Kevin Daniels at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.